Welcome back to Compliments to the Chef. I'm your host, Nancy.
And I'm your host, Bits.
And it's week two of season 23 of Top Chef.
Ooh, and things are heating up.
They are heating up, which is why I brought a guest to the pod today, Bits.
Oh, you did?
My chili pepper.
Oh. Nancy's showing a huge stuffed chili pepper that is in the shape of the Chili's logo. Is there any affiliation?
No affiliation. I got this on Etsy in advance of celebrating Chili Night this year, which had record low attendance. So no one got to see it.
Was it because of the pillow?
I don't know. Like, honestly, I almost bought, you know, I love the decorations. Like, I have so many fake peppers and like things around. And I almost got like three of these chili peppers. And Dylan was like, you don't need three chili peppers. Like, you get one. He's like, where are you going to put that in your apartment? Like, there's no room. So I only got one, which turned out to be good. But it was kind of funny. It came like really shrink wrapped and it had to expand. But yeah, I got it from a lady on Etsy.
Dried chili.
It's really cute. I like it.
It is really cute. It's a good shape, too, for cradling the head.
Yeah. It's like a little snuggle. Anyway, yeah. So I brought this chili to celebrate this episode because it's getting hot in here. So
hot
take
in
off
here.
All your clothes. But before we get into that, we have some announcements at the top of our episode. The first is, Bits, I don't know if you noticed this, but we actually did not yet interview Tom Colicchio.
I was gonna say that didn't happen, right?
Oh, I knew we forgot to do something.
We forgot a whole ass interview.
with the man, the myth, the legend himself.
No. Dear listeners, we had to reschedule, so know that is coming and forthwith, but it is not yet here. So in case you were wondering if we're
has
full
not
of shit,
happened.
Half correct.
Yeah. So that's the first announcement. Second announcement, I guess, is really just a leftover from last week, unless we have other announcements that you want to share.
I'm declare bankruptcy. No other announcements.
Okay, cool. Well, here's a leftover from last week. We said that we were going to look into this brand new sweet potato, the Purple Majesty that was invented in 2021.
Yeah, what gives?
Okay, so what gives? So glad you asked. The Purple Majesty sweet potato was invented by North Carolina State University in 2021. They didn't give a reason why. But here are some characteristics of the Purple Majesty sweet potato. It has proven itself to be one of the most productive purple sweet potato varieties on the market. Unlike other purple sweet potato varieties, the Purple Majesty provides consistent yields from one plant to the next. So I guess it's a really good crop if you're trying to, you know, market your wares. You know what you're going to get out of these crops. These sweet potatoes have a high nutritional value and are rich in anthocyanin and antioxidants. The color is retained after cooking, making them a great option for a roasted vegetable medley. Many like to roast these with the Murasaki and orange sweet potatoes for a colorful assortment. So that's just a little bit on the Purple Majesty sweet potato. Let's see, what else have we learned about it?
You know what? Quick interjection, and we learned this episode too with the gentleman from Buttsucker or Sucker Butt. Buttsucker, I'm sorry. Pucker Butt.
Stop being such a Buttsucker.
Oh my God. Okay, do not suck a butt after.
How dare you insult Ed Curie, one of the weirdest masterminds of a generation.
Well, I was about to compliment him and say I would like to, for next week, do a leftover on how many produce varietals are attributed to North Carolinians. I feel like North Carolina is like, you know, the Silicon Valley of agriculture. They're just spitting them out.
It is definitely an ag heavy. Well, and then also thinking about Sean Brock and his Carolina Gold rice, which I famously discussed on a previous season of Top Chef.
Walk out with your Brock out.
In, you know, an X induced haze. But let's see. Okay, I'm writing down that leftover for next week. So what is it, produce varietals of the Carolinas?
Yeah, like just how many people here have invented new varietals of a fruit or a vegetable or a grain or
I'm going to let you school sustenance. Us a little bit next
yeah,
time.
Yeah, I'm going to left over that.
Left over. Well, other than that, do we have any other leftovers, potlucks, announcements for the good of the order?
No.
All right. Well, then let's begin.
Okay, Nancy, Amuse-Bouche Reaction, Episode 2, Season 23.
Really fun ep. And the real thing that I want to say at the top is I liked this take on like a local challenge because we, of course, are like, okay, what's going to be the Carolina barbecue challenge? That's the thing we all associate with the Carolinas. Wisconsin, it was cheese. Canada, it was maple syrup. I liked this take on the local flavor as the early on challenge. I thought it was fun. It was original, breath of fresh air. So I am all for this. And we got a little product placement, which we love.
Yes. Love a leap in product placement. Always welcome. For me, I just love a progressive. I love a large team progressive menu.
Mm-hmm.
I especially love that this one forced collaboration in a very measurable way.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, it had to get hotter, so you better figure it out. I loved that. I loved that formula. And it was nice to see, like, I love when we have those, like, single challenge group team challenges. Like, yeah. Let me see individually what's happening. Let me see. But at the same time, let me see what the group dynamic is so I can start, like, figuring out my picking yes. order.
Yes, big time. The one thing I'll say is that I do think this season has been a bit of a return to the like no interpersonal drama season, which
yeah, we need to shake it up.
We need a little bit of drama. We know like last season we obviously got a little bit and it was the perfect amount. Like we don't need a villain, but we want a little bit of tension in the tent or in the Top Chef kitchen. But anyway, that actually brings us to the beginning of the episode, which is we enter lights, camera, action on the Top Chef kitchen. JP Connolly doing what he does best, made a beautiful set this go around. And we finally get into the Thunderdome of Bravo yes. Top Chef.
Well, okay, you kind of rolled over that, but I do want to do a plug for our earlier interview. We interviewed JP Connolly, who is the set designer for all of the Top Chef kitchens. Well, for going back at least a handful, if not more, seasons. But it was super interesting conversation.
Seasons.
Yeah, a long time. Super interesting conversation. Definitely tune into that. It's somewhere in the bowels of our our discography. Ooh. I don't know what you call it. Anyways,
our body
okay.
of work.
Loved the kitchen. We got a little bit of a, I feel like a little bit of a, an homage to UNC, perhaps a little bit of the blue, like Carolina,
oh,
or like
yeah, I didn't think about that.
Blue Panthers, like kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, blue. That's it. I don't know.
Blue,
other blue things. Blue.
University blue, famously the blue of UNC Chapel Hill. If you're getting your Nike Dunks, University blue, good for you. But yeah, it just felt nice and cozy to be in the Top Chef kitchen.
Love
but we were not there
walls.
For long. We were only there for the quick fire. But let's talk about this quick fire and our guest judge for the episode. Who's coming through that door?
None other than Top Chef Boston winner Maylin. I love Maylin.
I love Maylin.
I love when Maylin shows up. Just like no nonsense, no frills commentary.
Mm-hmm.
Just RBF all over the place.
She is such a force in that kitchen. Like, she just comes with an enormous amount of energy to her that is, it's got to be intimidating, man. To
I
cook
would be
for Kristen Fish and Maylin.
To be around her.
I would not want to be in that room. Like, there would be a magnetic field around the two of them together, and I'd just be like, oh, nope, not going to touch that. Absolutely not.
Yeah. I'm like, you're getting some hot garbage if you're asking me to serve her, because I would not be able to do it.
Yes, but Maylin comes in with essentially like a Cracker Barrel ballpark getup, but instead of caramel popcorn, it is full of Talenti ice cream.
I love you meant Cracker Jacks on this. Wait, I'm sorry. Did you mean Cracker Jacks?
Yeah, what did I say?
Cracker Barrel.
Okay, you got to give it to me. That's
same aesthetic, same
off.
Aesthetic. But I'm picturing like, just wanted to pause on that visual. Okay, keep going. I'm in a distract mode tonight. So
I am a coastal elite. I have never pretended to be anything other.
Have you ever been to a Cracker Barrel?
Yes, I have. I've been to two Cracker Barrels in my life. When I went to college in the Midwest and we'd go camping on Sunday morning on the way back, we would go to Cracker Barrel.
Yum. Mm-hmm. You play checkers by the fire.
Yeah, that little like triangle game that they have where you like
peg game.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been to a Cracker Barrel.
All right. So you spoke from a place of experience.
You thought you had me there.
I had you.
Nancy, you've never been to a Cracker Barrel. I'm from Pennsylvania. I've been to a Cracker Barrel.
I'm a Central America, not like that. centrist America elite.
You would be amazed at the number of local chains I have been to. I've driven across these United States. I've been to 46 of 50 states.
Yeah, I mean, you also went to Arkansas out of spite. So
yes, I did.
There's no stopping you.
Nothing will stop me from hitting all 50. I've never been to Hawaii. I've never been to Nebraska. What are the other two I've never been to? West Virginia. And I have never been to Kansas. Those are the four states I've never been to.
Okay. You got time.
Yeah, I got a whole lifetime. But what we don't have a lot of time for is to discuss this episode. So let's get into it. Okay. Quick fire challenge. Create a savory dish with ingredients from the region that inspired your Talenti flavor of ice cream. I really liked this challenge. I thought it was a perfect little capsule for a quick fire. And let's get into what they made. Bits, which flavor? Let's start with a flavor. What flavor of ice cream would you have chosen from this mix?
Oh, brother. Well, I know what I wouldn't have chosen, and that's mint gelato.
really?
That's my favorite. If I had to pick a flavor, I would say that's my favorite flavor, but I would feel like, I wouldn't know what to do with that. I probably would have gone for the pistachio. What about you?
Interesting. I don't have as strong a reaction to mint as you do. I mean, mint is a beautiful herb that's naturally occurring in nature. So I could see making any sort of mint dish. But it probably is not the one I would have chosen. Maybe it is the one I would have chosen. I don't know that I would have. Things I know I wouldn't choose. Coffee, because I don't like it.
Yeah,
I would not have chosen vanilla because it's a waste of calories. Save it for judgy table. But no, I have a different judgy table. And I don't believe I would have chosen caramel cookie crunch.
Can we pause on that? What made this like an Argentine flavor?
The alfajore is an Argentinian cookie with the caramel.
I missed that. Okay, got it.
Let's get into, so essentially each of these flavors is inspired by a different region and the chefs had to cook using ingredients from that region. So why don't we start a little bit with mango, which is a flavor I maybe would have chosen because that bright yellow looked delicious. Mm-hmm. We have Jossie and Nana, making mango, and the flavor profile that they have there is Indian. So they have a bunch of different ingredients, curries. And Jossie made a malai paneer tikka with mango chutney and cucumber salad. Sounded yummy. I liked the thought of that. But Nana really came out swinging, even though she was like, I've never really cooked with Indian flavors before. She made a cauliflower steak with a curry vinaigrette. I thought that was really clever. With tomato salsa and spinach. What did you think of these dishes?
I love a paneer, so I was pulling for the paneer. Not that it was like a head-to-head, but I'm not gonna lie. You know, jumping ahead, Nana comes out on top. I was not expecting that. I was like, oh, they're gonna be like, oh, this is kind of boring or unoriginal. Mm-hmm. But you cook it well, you know. And I think that it helped having like Mei Lin there because that seemed to be her, yeah, her approach throughout the episode was just like, well, it was good, you know.
Yes, I completely agree. Okay, what other flavors do you want to talk about, or what dishes called to you?
Okay, so we need to talk about Brittany, who is definitely like on the back foot coming into this week. Didn't do super strong last week. Picks, you know, this coffee chocolate chip Colombian flavor profile and is like, I'm gonna lean into the coffee. I need to, you know, redeem myself, and kind of goes coffee spice tartare. Kind of a crazy move.
Yeah. Another crazy move was her reaching her hand into a burning piece of meat and lifting it up.
I love that. Yeah.
Do they not have tongs?
I don't know.
That was bold. I was like, man, this girl is hard.
Hardcore.
It was hardcore. I actually, from the description of the dish, I conceptually understood where she was going, and I thought it could have been good. Unfortunately, the feedback that she got was that the coffee flavor did not come through enough and that the raw onion was a bit overpowering. So I think she's struggling a little bit with balance. But, you know, overall, I thought it was a solid concept. Unfortunately, on the bottom as well, we have for the quickfire, we have Seeger and Dwen. So Seeger got vanilla. And they had flavors from Madagascar. I am deeply unfamiliar with the flavors of Madagascar. Are you?
Have you seen any of the Madagascar movies?
I have never seen a Madagascar movie.
I actually haven't either. I feel like it's that category. And okay, like I'm making a joke, obviously. Like there's fully a culture to respect in Madagascar. But on a side note on Madagascar,
I'm puckering my butt right now wherever this is going. I don't even want to know what insane thing you're about to say.
No, I'm describing that there's like sort of a genre of animated films or like Pixar films that are like, they're not like good enough that you would watch it as like an adult with no children, but they're not like strictly, like they're not strictly just for kids.
There are jokes in there for the parents.
Yeah, I expect at some point in my life I will watch that movie. Just not yet. So I hadn't watched it.
Living in anticipation of the time when we have to watch Madagascar.
No, we have a friend who just went to Madagascar. Lauren went to Madagascar recently.
Okay, we're going to have to.
We need to get her on the pod and break it down.
We're in that one because no one here knows who Lauren is. But okay, Seeger made a strawberry snapper with coconut and uni. And in the sauce work, which unfortunately they said was a bit muddied, he put the ice cream, which they seemed quite appalled by. But maybe my novice understanding, I thought that was kind of clever. Like it's essentially cream and sugar. I feel like that goes in. Maybe not so much the sugar, but there's a lot of heavy cream in sauces. But they seem to not really take to that. But I think the big surprise here was Dwen, who came in really, really strong in episode one, but unfortunately was on the bottom of this quickfire. Dwen had the butter pecan combination, and she was dealing with flavors from the South. So she made a pecan-crusted pork with peach and grape reduction, and it really came down to the cook on her pork, unfortunately. So that was who's on the bottom. Something that we need to discuss was Jennifer and Justin picking the same ice cream and making nearly identical dishes.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Wait, but whose did you think looks better? I kind of thought Jennifer's looked better.
I think Jennifer's looked a little better.
Yeah.
I thought it was kind of sweet, the aside that Justin gave around Jennifer. He's like, you know, I feel like she needs to be reminded that she can cook with the best of them.
Yeah.
It was sweet. I'm sure it could be interpreted in a different way. Like it maybe could be interpreted as a bit condescending. But I think it came from a place of love. It did.
Yeah, of course. I agree. No.
No.
I don't have a formed thought on that.
No. But,
okay, side note. As Nancy knows, I no longer am like directly doing my craft. And I now manage people. And I recently had to like go in and do like a design thing the other day at work. And it was really hard for me. And I was like, it was like, everybody like moved my cheese, you know, like none of the things, like the tools were. So I get what she's feeling right now, because you're probably just like, oh my God, I'm like so behind.
Yep.
What's going on in the industry. So I'm rooting for her after that. Like, just, I don't know.
I love that.
I think she just like has really solid, like good flavor, good instinct.
I would say she is top of the charts for instincts of like what's going to work well and what's going to fit the challenge.
I feel like, I don't think either of us put her as the cook their own food prediction. No. That's not really going to be her problem. I think maybe it's just like more of a trust.
No, because she already did a dish that like she was saying, you know, we used to grow up eating this. So I'm not worried that she's going to lose her identity. Yeah.
You're right. I think it's just her vibe. Like, she's not coming in like, I'm hot shit, but she is very talented.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, we need a good mix of
people in the top of this challenge. In the top, we have Oscar, Lawrence, and Nana, which was really exciting to see. We already talked about Nana, but Oscar made this insane sounding dish. I could not follow it, but it clearly went well. He had the caramel cookie crunch ice cream, which was the Argentinian flavor profile. He made a polenta cachapa with brown sugar, chili, almonds, and grilled provolone?
Question mark. Yeah. Looked really good. I'd slam
it. It looks delicious. I cannot put together in my mind what this must have tasted like, but it went well.
Right.
So that's
good.
The
provolone was, I think, really what threw me on that too. I was like, provolone?
Well, one of my most controversial opinions is that I don't like provolone.
I just don't think it's worth it.
It's a bit of a farty
provolone
cheese.
Is the vanilla of cheese.
I think,
like, there's good versions of it when you like, go to like a really high specialty place, but bad provolone and bad vanilla ice cream is like the same.
Yeah, I would say that for me, at the very specialty grocers that sell the real deal provolone, like that's the provolone I actually particularly dislike. It has a very strong flavor that I don't like.
Oh, okay. So you like the Breyers version of provolone.
I don't really like either is what I'm saying. It's just not – provolone and Swiss
are sandwiches. Okay, what is it? Which is it?
Make up your mind. I'm just saying that I don't like it in its like cheapest, grossest form, and I also don't like it in its most expensive form. I'm an equal opportunity provolone disliker, okay?
Okay, respect.
Just let me live, okay?
No, I think a provolone on like an Italian cold cut –
right, that's what it's made for.
It really sings. but yeah, I couldn't get this flavor profile here. But the flavor profile I did get was Lawrence's lamb burek with apricot jam, pickled tomatoes. That sounded unbelievable.
Unbelievable. The fact that he made a burek in 30 minutes is crazy. It's puff pastry.
That's
crazy. Wild. But we have to talk about Lawrence. Lawrence had a standout episode.
Yeah.
Really, really, really good episode, but unfortunately, like, was just second fiddle every time. But I really want Lawrence to get a moment, because not only did he have an excellent dish in the quickfire, but also in the elimination challenge.
Yeah.
And he is really impressing me. I also got a fun fact, I guess, I don't know if this is a potluck or whatever, but friend of the pod, Kendra Vaculin, said that she and Lawrence worked together on like some cookbook projects and that he's incredible. So, Lawrence, we're excited to watch you work. Is he on our fantasy team?
He better be.
Yes. Quick plug. We did do a fantasy draft again with the men of the LA Food Countdown. So go listen to that because it was fun. Thank you, Bits, for representing us. But let's move on to the elimination challenge, shall we?
Le challenge.
Tell us about it, Bits.
Oh, well, Nancy, you had to be there. this was a great elimination challenge. So can you tell I'm stalling until I get my notes in front of me?
Would you like me to say what the challenge was?
No.
No.
Okay. So.
Oh, sorry. Very quickly. Lawrence did win the quick fire. I just want to go on. He got $10,000. Good for him. Yeah.
And he's up to 15K now. Shout out. Is it Quickfire, Quick Cash?
It's not Wachovia. What bank is it again? Wells Fargo?
Wells Wachovia. What is that? Genovia?
You don't remember the bank Wachovia?
No, that must be some regional stuff.
Okay.
Get back to your region.
Okay, just tell us about the elimination challenge.
Maybe it was like Talenti. gelato gazillions. I'm saving it for my judging table. Okay. Dude, we're on another level. Okay.
Sorry, everyone.
Elimination challenge begin. This week, the challenge was to create a 7-course meal that gets progressively hotter, kind of like the two of us, right?
I think we get progressively dumber the more episodes we do.
Okay. Again, I say to myself, this is a challenge that I'm like, how have we not had this challenge yet? It's an incredible challenge, but I'm like, we've really never had a like progressive meal that gets spicier. Okay, but now we're doing it, 23 seasons in.
Love it. It's got hints of Hot Ones, which, like, all respect to Sean Evans. I love your work. What the thing that really caught me is, I even beyond the progression of the hotness, I don't think we've ever really explored spice as a lever in challenges. Like, of course, you know, it's come up before, but the fact that the entire focus was around spice was super cool and fun. It was just another way that Top Chef isolates these little aspects of cooking, and you don't think about them really independently of each other. But I really like that that was the focus of this. And it was also great because we got to meet Puckerbutt Farms. Puckerbutt. And so we got to see the inventor Ed Curie of the Carolina Reaper and Pepper X, which he's a wild dude. I've seen stuff on the internet about him.
Curie too. Do you think there's any relation to Mary Curie?
No.
Okay. They're both people of science.
Oh, but okay, so Ed Curie is like this kooky man in the Carolinas just growing his hot peppers. And he lends his farm to the chefs for a day to make this progressive meal. And it was so much fun. First off, the centerpiece in the table, or on the table, excuse me, of the colored peppers. Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, that was stunning.
Loved it. You know, it was just a really cool challenge to see the chefs grapple with how to incorporate these peppers into their work. And they were eating them raw. Have you ever experienced spice-induced hallucinations?
No.
Really? Not even an Ugly Baby?
Mm-mm, no.
Oh, I have transcended dimensions with spice. I believe I have.
Tell me what you saw.
Well, it was at Ugly Baby, the stay away udon thani duck salad. R.I.P. Ugly Baby. It's now Hungry Thirsty. But that, I ate just the hottest bite of food I've ever experienced in my life. My ears started ringing. My eyes were watering. I was like seeing little like strobes of light. And then a waitress walked by with a plate of rice, and I thought that she was I thought she could see my struggle and was proactively giving me rice. And so I loudly exclaimed in Ugly Baby, which, as you know, is a very tiny restaurant. I said, "Oh, thank God." And everyone heard, and she goes, "This rice is not for you." And I was like, "Then I'd like some, please." Yeah, it was. I definitely saw God that day. But we are here to see God in this Chili's.
Yeah. Okay. Missed opportunity this episode to have it be sponsored by Chili's.
Yeah. Or to have like Jenna Fisher come on and be a judge. But we digress. So let's talk about what everyone made. So we have the red team and the green team. On the whole, I thought that everyone did a really good job.
Yeah.
It is rare this early in the season to have so few clunkers.
Yes. And I think at a high level, we can go round by round. High level, my read of the sitch was that the red team had it in the first and the green team came back, like clawed their way back up.
Big time.
But yeah, I mean, so we got a classic grocery store shop drama. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like you were saying earlier, I just think we're too well adjusted now. We have to make mountains out of molehills, you know?
Yes.
Like And we got a little bit of that from Sherry. Shout out, Sherry.
Yes.
Who said, oh, no, she was, somebody was throwing words at the grocery store, but Sherry was pissed because Brandon's, like, meal was hotter than it should be as the first course, which I, like, kind of loved. I'm like, yo, dog, come on.
Well, the drama that we got at Whole Foods was that we almost went over budget. Spoiler alert, they didn't. But things that we learned in that, have you noticed that Justin Tootla has been wearing incredibly short shorts this entire time?
No, I haven't. Because he hangs back. That's his strategy.
He hangs back. And, well, I thought it was funny because in the predictions, I actually said that I thought Justin was the most likely to go over budget at Whole Foods. He was cool as a cucumber back there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was amazed. But let's get to the cooking. Let's talk about the matchups. So course one, we have Seeger versus Brandon. Seeger for the green team made a Kumamoto oyster with cucumber mignonette and a jalapeno sauce. Brandon made a tuna tartare with jalapeno tomato jelly. Which of these dishes would you go for?
I would definitely go for Brandon's. Yeah. I'm like so into the concept of tomato jelly.
Interesting to pair it with tuna. Like, that was a very interesting flavor combination that I don't know that I would have expected.
Yeah, but tuna tartare, I mean,
I just don't know. Tomato,
it's like,
and
that,
tuna,
it's got that little bit of the acid, maybe. I don't know. I mean, yeah, that's a fair assessment. But you have that heat, and I think that's why it works. Yeah. If it was just like, yeah.
On looks alone, I'm going Brandon. I think on concept, I did love the idea of starting off with like a really cold, bright oyster. I thought that was a really smart idea.
Yeah.
And so I thought that both of these dishes looked delicious. The issue with Seeger's that they gave is that it maybe came out a bit too aggressively with the spice in the first dish, but it did dissipate quickly. So it wasn't really an issue.
Yeah. So while they didn't say it outright, I do think red had this, had this round.
I agree.
The second round we had Sherry paired up with Brittany. Sherry came out, she did a chilled seafood chowder. And then Brittany had a poached shrimp corn salad. Mm-hmm. I really liked, we got some of this in the talking head, but that Jonathan, the other twin, was talking about, you know, Brittany's feeling like a little bit like up against the ropes. We're going to reel her back in. I thought it was a really smart strategy to put her early on where like spice she wasn't going to have to wrestle with that.
Yep.
Like anecdotally, I just have a strong aversion to protein that is served on like a, it wasn't really a succotash, you know, it was a corn salad, but like I just I'm like, God, I hate that. Like I just hate that. It just feels dated.
I've never met a succotash I liked.
Same. Okay, that was gonna be my judgy table, but I was like, I don't know, we're in the South, people will be like pissed off. No.
Save it.
I have since chosen another one, so we can dunk on it now, but it's just so like blah. It's like cowboy caviar. It's like,
yeah,
guys,
it doesn't do anything for me. I always I feel about succotash the way I feel about Aritzia, which is I have it once every few years, and enough. And every time I have it, I'm like, I didn't really like that. And then a few years go by, and I forget that I didn't really like it, and so I'll order a dish with succotash, and I'm like, I still didn't like it. That's how I feel about Aritzia too. Yeah, it just, unfortunately, that dish didn't do much to excite me. But you know what did excite me?
What?
Sherry's dish. Visually stunning.
Yeah.
It looks beautiful. I love how they described the broth as rich without being heavy. Mm-hmm. And that, because I was like, oh, yeah, that must be so good on a hot day. Like something that is so full of flavor, but not, you know, too heavy. I really loved that description of it. And I think that they felt that the red team once again nailed the progression in terms of heat.
Yes.
Which is awesome.
Yes.
Okay, so our third dish, we have Jennifer versus Dwen. We have Jennifer making crab and grits, and then Dwen making pork larb. We love larb.
She's a larb gal.
Larb gal. Both of these dishes, I think, were clearly excellent. The Jennifer's dish, to me, I think because I'm so familiar with what larb is, Dwen's, I'm sure, delicious. I would have eaten it 10 times over. But the way they were talking about Jennifer's dish was really intriguing to me because it clearly had so many layers to discover within it.
Yeah.
That made it really exciting to them.
I like
that. I don't know that
yeah.
Jen really innovated the LARB form. I think she made an excellent, near perfect LARB. I think that Jennifer mm-hmm. innovated the crab and grits form with this
mm-hmm,
dish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think this round goes to Green.
Yeah.
Okay. Fourth round, we had Lawrence v. Jonathan.
Yep.
Lawrence came out with a Carolina style Yusheng eggplant.
Mm-hmm.
Eggplant three ways. Do we have a counter? N three ways?
For X ways. I can add it in.
Okay, got to do it.
Added.
This has been something we have historically monitored.
Speaking of counters, we don't have a tartare counter. Last year, we had a non-fish tartare. We had like a meat tartare counter. But we did get a tartare in this episode. Mm-hmm. We have a crudo, ceviche, and agua chile counter, but we don't have a tartare counter. Do we want a tartare counter? And if so, do we want it to be specifically fish and or meat?
I think we keep them separate.
So we want fish tartare and meat tartare.
Yeah.
Are we like putting ourselves out too thin on these counters?
We might be. I think let's drop the tartare. Tartare is like let's drop the meat tartare.
But we'll do XN ways.
Yes, yes. That's because that's Top Classic. Chef. That's showbiz.
That's showbiz, baby.
Okay, and then Jonathan did a pan-seared snapper. Jonathan, you know, Tom was like, the fish is really good, but he went up against Lawrence. And Lawrence was like, damn, that was good. Layers of flavor, feeling the spice. Like this, I think the boom, 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 like four progression of these first four courses on red were just really, were really
stunning.
Singing for Maylin, especially, who noted the progression there.
Yep.
So I think red took this round as well.
Totally. And I do want to give, once again, Lawrence his flowers. I think that had the red team, I think that this was the best dish of the night.
Mm-hmm.
And I am happy that Tom was clearly impressed with this. Like, you can tell that Tom's wheels are spinning from this eggplant dish alone. And I'm excited to see how that brings itself into the rest of the season. But up next, dish number five, we have Anthony versus Nana. Anthony made a jerk lamb with spicy pecans and a hoe cake. Nana made red snapper with light soup. Light soup being a recipe that her grandmother makes. It's very spicy. So I do think that Anthony knocked this out of the park with both the heat level and the preparation of the lamb, the jerk flavoring. That was such a clever use of spice, I think. Unfortunately, Nana had trouble with the cook on her fish. It was inconsistent. Mm. She tried the sous vide, didn't really go her way. And so we saw a bit of a blunder there, but she didn't get any knocks on the flavoring of her food or the seasoning of her food, only the cook, which at this stage in the competition, you can come back from, but soon that will be inexcusable.
Yeah. Yeah. I think in the same way that Lawrence is sort of trending as always the bridesmaid, we're starting to get that thing that happens where, you know, there's some people that we continue to see kind of flirting with the bottom in this season. Mm-hmm. It's looking like Nana and Brittany so far, but that someone's always a little bit worse.
Yes.
So I think they need to kind of like get it back next week. Otherwise, this trend may just continue.
Very well put.
Was it? I don't know. But
I think so. Okay, tell us about the sixth course.
Okay, sixth course, we had Mr. Tootla and Oscar. So Justin came out with a shrimp-stuffed hot fried chicken wing. Sounded very interesting to me. Put a pin in that. And Oscar came out with a pork al pastor blue corn harache.
I mean, to me, even at the beginning of the episode when Oscar described – the second he said al pastor, I was like, that is such a fucking good idea. Excuse my language. I was honestly in hot anticipation of this dish. Excuse the pun. I was excited to see it. I was excited when he thought of it. I was excited to see the execution. I was incredibly happy when they all loved it. It just, to me, was such a perfect dish for this challenge.
I kind of felt that way about Justin's, actually. Like, I just was intrigued by the combination of shrimp and chicken wing. And was curious how that was going to shake out. Unfortunately, not well is how it shook out. It was kind of like flabby on the one side. He kind of pivoted to the grill. So that was a bummer. And this is, I think, the moment when we – well, in addition to Nana, where we start to see the tides shift in favor of the green team.
Yep, which is only punctuated by another absolute samurai killer of a dish from Rhoda, who in the seventh course made a pepper braised short rib that looked so sophisticated.
Yeah.
Like, I think that this challenge could lend itself to really campy stuff. And for the most part, we didn't see it. But that looked like a fine dining dish to me. It was beautiful. It was so elegant and carefully placed. I really loved the look of that dish. And she went up against Jossie, who said that, you know, despite his Indian heritage, is not a fan of spicy food.
Oh, so why did he do that?
Why did he do that? He made a lamb vindaloo, which he says is the most recognizable spicy dish of Indian cuisine. But unfortunately, it just wasn't spicy enough.
Well, he put it in like so late in the game because he doesn't like spice. And like he just didn't add the heat throughout, like everybody else did. Like, I think a lot of chefs got the positive note from Tom about the heat is imbued, the heat is building, like it's so layered. Yep. And his was just sort of like, and you saw that cut too of them just like dumping in the hot sauce at the end. It's just like, oh my God.
Yeah,
and it was dry, which sucks. Yeah.
Yes. But, unfortunately, the presentation, it was also very brown. And I think that Rhoda managed to add color and visual appeal into her dish in a way that she took the cake, clearly, which is why when we – it's surprising that no one tried dessert, by the way. I mean, I understand why.
I didn't even think about that. Like having, that's a good point.
I understand having a spicy dessert, but having the spiciest dish be dessert is a little too far.
Yeah. Yes, agree. But yes, 100%.
We get to judge's table, and as we said, the green team takes it with an incredible back nine from Anthony, Oscar, and Rhoda. And the red team, unfortunately, is on the bottom. But they did go so far as to say, like, this was a really hard decision. Yeah. I do think that, you know, everyone put up a pretty solid dish today. The three dishes on the top – the three favorites were Seeger, Jennifer, and Rhoda. I think we probably could have guessed that. With Rhoda taking 2 for 2 wins. Huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. That she's a beast.
Yeah. She was our number one draft pick.
Not to brag.
So see you at the awards ceremony.
Yeah.
Whatever they do at the end of drafts. We never made it that far.
Never made it that far. Something that I will say is I liked her reaction. She was like, does this make people intimidated by me? Good. I'm their competition.
Yeah. Love it.
It wasn't rude or conceited. She was just like, I'm here to cook my best. I thought the way she reacted to winning twice was awesome.
Yeah. And also that moment where we see her wanting, like, let's put all of our sauces in a line. Like, let's taste them in order. Like, she just knows her shit. So,
she took the reins. She did a great job. On the bottom, we had Justin, Nana, and Jossie. And unfortunately, we see Jossie go home on this challenge, which means
I liked his energy.
I really liked his energy too. I really liked his vibe at the, at Puckerbutt Farms when they were there during the day. He was wearing a cool like white mesh shirt that I thought was quite chic. And he just seemed to have a really good attitude.
Yeah. It is interesting that the winner and the loser were in the same round and the last round.
Yeah.
Thought that was kind of interesting. Yeah.
Curious. Well, we are sad to see Jossie go home, particularly because we won't be seeing him in Last Chance Kitchen. But starting next week, we will have Last Chance Kitchen. So we will be returning with our famous second helping episodes to recap those. But before we go, Bits, judgy table?
Yes, but you gotta go.
Me? I gotta go first?
You gotta go first. I kind of peppered out all of my, like, B-list judgy tables throughout this episode. Boo, okay. Succotash, not Boo. Enough grocery store drama. But, yeah, I got one. We'll see. We'll see.
Okay.
I'll let you take it away.
I've got one. I don't know how long it's going to take me, but here we go. Nancy, your judgy table starts now. What is Talenti doing in their factory to screw the lids on so tight? If you buy a jar of Talenti ice cream, you better be prepared to lose skin cells off of your hand, because that thing is screwed on so tightly. Holy moly, is it hard to open a jar of Talenti. You know that some PA unscrewed all of those so that they didn't have to. I have had, like, deep burns from the ribbed plastic of a Talenti lid, to the point where I actually don't really buy Talenti all that much anymore, because it's so difficult to open. Are they putting super glue on those lids? And the issue is, it's ice cream. You can't run under hot water to loosen it up. It's just going to melt the whole thing. The conundrum. End, Talenti. Make it looser.
Unfortunately, I also have a Talenti related one. And but side note, like, I completely agree with that take. And also, it reminded me of this very vivid memory I have from COVID, where – so my dad famously, like – not famously, but for some reason, like, bought – like, only drank bottled water. And he would buy this bottled water that – you know how, like, bottled water now is, like, so thin and crinkly, like, the bottles? Mm-hmm. And they keep making the caps, like, smaller and shorter.
Yes.
And, like, there was some version of some water bottle that was, like, he was, like, I have to write in. I cannot open these water bottles anymore. It's impossible. He, like, wrote into customer support and was, like, I cannot open your water bottle lids. And apparently they wrote back and they're, like, yeah, we've, like, been hearing this. It's a thing. Like, we're working on it.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That
so
is
you
so
could
funny.
You could be the change you want to see.
Oh my! I'm gonna write into the Talenti Corporation. I will say that those really thin bottle caps that they've, like, reduced in size are how I learned that I have arthritis in my left hand, because I literally, like, I when the caps were bigger, like, you could get more of a grip on it with your whole hand, and now, like, there's really only enough surface area for, like, two fingers.
Yeah.
And I can't do it with my left hand because I have really bad arthritis.
Whoa, that's crazy. I didn't know that about you.
Well, now you do. We're getting older bits. Wow. You know, I know we've been friends since we were young, but we're not the same. We're not spring chickens anymore. But bits, your Talenti judgy table, sponsored by Talenti. By the way, very quickly, I just looked up Wachovia. It was a national bank that was purchased by Wells Fargo. So I was right on
together we Wachovia.
Yeah. And it's spelled Wachovia. And it was like Wachovia watches over you. That was always was always the joke. Okay, Bits, your Talenti judgy table starts now.
Talenti is trash. It's just trash. It is. I have never bought a Talenti that did not have freezer burn immediately. They are. It's like, is this part of it? It's only ever has freezer burn on it. And when I close my eyes and I picture tasting ice cream from the grocery store, I taste freezer burn because of Talenti. And that's kind of it. I just think it's trash ice cream. And I don't really – like, you're way more of the ice cream girly of the two of us. So I'm not usually going for an ice cream anyways. But, yeah, I mean, when this is the option, no thank you. So that's my judgy table. It's trash.
Wow. I mean, hot as a Carolina Reaper take over there. I agree with you on the freezer burn. That is such a good observation. Always freezer burn. But what is funny is I remember when Talenti first came on the scene, it was like, at least in my family, which, as you know, we have upwards of 10 active pints at any time.
Yeah.
It was kind of a revelation. We started with the Talenti raspberry sorbet.
Yeah.
And that stuff was good compared to what was on the market. I haven't had the raspberry in a long time, but, like, I do come from a Talenti family. I agree with you that it's not the top brass of ice cream. I mean, look, nowadays when you got Jenny's at $14 a pint, like, what else are you going to do? But it does always have freezer burn. It is impossible to open. I think ever since it was purchased by Unilever, you know, things have gone awry.
Like, what are those things related? Like, can't open it and has freezer burn. Like, I wish you would, you know, I know some ice cream has, this is what ice cream needs to do. If you're listening, big ice cream, take heed. Mm-hmm. When you buy a Greek yogurt and it has the film that like touches the yogurt, you know, and you're pulling it back and it's literally making contact with the yogurt. We need that for ice cream.
Mm.
My ice cream needs to be sealed at that level because the freezer burn is a menace.
Well, it's like Häagen-Dazs always has that plastic thing that you pull off, but a lot of pints don't have that these days. That's a good point.
I know.
Wow. We need to do a deeper study on this.
God.
Big dairy, we're coming for you.
Big dairy, big ice cream. And your brother, big ice cream.
Yeah. Well, all right. That's our coverage of episode 2. We hope that you stuck with us because we went a little cuckoo tonight.
Up the rails.
We'll be back next week with a regular episode and a second helping. And at some point, we will have an interview with Tom Colicchio. So just stand by. But other than that, we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.